Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're moving on today. We're going to try and cover quite a few verses today. We're going to try and go from verse 43 to verse 52. It's a subsection entitled, Krishna is the Supreme Lord of all Lords. We just heard how Krishna is the basis of all existence, the source of all the different types of incarnations, basis of Brahman, support of material nature, and how one can come closer to him through remembrance and cultivation of remembrance through chanting the holy names and through the holy names realizing the form of the Lord, within the form his qualities, and how the qualities are demonstrated in the pastimes. So now this section, subsection from 43 to 52, is talking about different levels of existence and how Krishna's level is the highest, and then different deities, the deities of the particular levels mentioned in verse 43 initially, and then various other deities, important deities, and how Krishna is the Lord of all these deities. So, it's an interesting section, some interesting discussions about Durga, Lord Shiva, but due to our little bit lack of time, we'll have to proceed through a little quickly, I'm afraid. Let's start with text 43. We can say it responsively. Goloka namni nija damni tale chatasya. Devi Mahesha Haridama Suteshu Teshu. Tete Prabhava Nichaya Vihitas Chayena. Govinda Madi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Lowest of all is located Devi Dham, the mundane world. Next above it is Mahesh Dham, abode of Mahesh. Above Mahesh Dham is placed Hari Dham, the abode of Hari. And above them all is located Krishna's own realm, named Goloka. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who has allotted their respective authorities to the rulers of those graded realms. So here there are four levels mentioned, four levels of planetary systems. Devi Dham, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says in the purport of text 43, that Brahma, looking up to the higher position of Goloka, is speaking of the other realms from the point of view of his own realm. So his realm is this Devi Dham. He is at least within it, within Devi Dham. That means the material world. All the planets within the material world, including Brahmaloka, they're all part of Devi Dham. Then Mahesh Dham is higher. And above Mahesh Dham is Hari Dham. Hari Dham means the Vaikuntha planets. And then above the Vaikuntha planets is Goloka, Goloka Vrindavan, which is Krishna's personal realm. It is interesting about this Mahesh Dham and the whole subject of Lord Shiva, his abodes, different forms of him, and where these forms and these abodes fit into the scheme of things. This is really quite intriguing. Lord Shiva's abodes, plural, there's a number. They are above Devi Dham. Means they're above Brahmaloka. And within the material world, you can't go higher than Brahmaloka, really. So, Mahesh Dham, or the abodes of Lord Shiva, they are not really in the material world. But then above them is Hari Dham, the Vaikuntha realm. So in other words, Lord Shiva's abodes are not really in the Vaikuntha realm either. So where are they? What is left? We don't really know of anything else. Are they in the Brahma Jyoti? Actually, just like Lord Shiva is in a special category of his own, and all his different forms also, they're in categories, they're in a category of his own. So his abodes are like that. His abodes are like that. In the purport, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, about six lines down, next above Devi Dham is located Shiva Dham, one portion of which, called Mahakala Dham, is enveloped in darkness. Interpenetrating this portion of Shiva Dham, there shines the Sada Shiva Loka, full of great light. So the basic idea is that Lord Shiva's existing on different levels. There are different forms of Lord Shiva. Already we talked about Shambhu. He's the glance of Mahavishnu. And then Shambhu is existing within the greater material energy as the overall presiding deity of false ego within the entire material creation, associated with the original form of Durga, who's the original mother of all of the whole material creation, basically. And then we heard how Shambhu manifests as Rudra. Remember that. And it is actually that Rudra who is worshipped as Lord Shiva within this universe. He is a member of that Trinity, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. And he's the presiding deity of the mode of ignorance within this universe. So we have Shambhu. We have Lord Shiva, as we know him within this universe. And then we hear in Srimad Bhagavatam, if I remember correctly, it's the third canto, how when Lord Shiva appeared, that was the time that Lord Brahma asked the four Kamars to procreate, but they refused. They wanted to remain celibates and just focus on their spiritual lives without getting sidetracked. So Lord Brahma became very angry because he had manifested them specifically for this purpose of procreation. So his anger came out from between his eyebrows, and that is the Lord Shiva we've just been talking about, who is the famous and popular Lord Shiva of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. But when he came out, then 11 other forms of himself came out from him. That's described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And they started destroying everything. But then Lord Brahma, if I remember correctly, Lord Brahma preached to them that they should do penances and they will get their time to destroy in due course of time. But for the time being, they should wait and do penance So off they went, those 11 Rudras. And they went to this place mentioned here in the purport as Mahakala Dham. That is the lowest part of Shiva Loka, or the abode of these different forms of Shiva. So now we have Shambhu, we have Lord Shiva or Rudra, plus these 11 Rudras, and we have three abodes really. Then Srila Prabhupada in Chaitanya Charitamrita, let's just see. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada talks about another form of Lord Shiva, who is even higher. This is Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 6, verse 79, purport. Prabhupada says, in the Vayu Purana, there is a description of Sada Shiva in one of the Vaikuntha planets. That Sada Shiva is a direct expansion of Lord Krishna's form for pastimes. It is said that Sada Shiva, Lord Shambhu, is an expansion from the Sada Shiva in the Vaikuntha planets, Lord Vishnu, and that his consort Mahamaya is an expansion of Rama Devi or Lakshmi. So it appears then that Lord Shiva's abode extends from, like, the lower parts of Vaikuntha, through into the material world, through the causal ocean, into the material worlds, and there are two parts within the material world. One is Kailas, the abode of Shiva, the popular demigod, and the other is this Mahakala Dham, which is the place of the 11 Rudras. So how does all that sound? Does that sound acceptable? Or at least can we follow that? Lord Shiva is a little difficult to follow, to understand. So if you don't totally follow it, don't worry too much. But that's the basic idea. Yeah, we were just reading Prabhupada's purport to Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 6, verse 79. In the Vayu Purana, there is a description of Sada Shiva in one of the Vaikuntha planets. That Sada Shiva is a direct expansion of Lord Krishna's form for pastimes. It is said that Lord Shambhu is an expansion from the Sada Shiva in the Vaikuntha planets, and that his consort Mahamaya is an expansion of Rama Devi. Of course, we already read about Shambhu and Mahamaya and their joining together and reproducing. So there's so now we have four. Am I right? Four? We have Sada Shiva in Vaikuntha, who's a form of Krishna for pastimes. He's a form of Lord Vishnu. Then we have Shambhu. Then we have Lord Shiva, who's the popular demigod worshipped by Hindu people and a member of the Trinity, they call it sometimes, Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. And then we have the Rudras, expanded from that form of Shiva, and they are in Mahakala Dham. Mahakala means the great time, when time will come to an end, or when the end of the universe, the time for the end of the universe will come, then those Rudras will begin the process of destruction. So we have four levels of forms or manifestations of Lord Shiva. Yeah. So generally speaking, actually we're going to, in a couple of verses, there is going to be a discussion about Lord Shiva as such, Shambhu. And the basic idea about Lord Shambhu is that he's kind of in between. He's not exactly Vishnu, generally. And he's not one of the living entities. He's in between. He's in his own category. It's his own tattva. They're different tattvas, different types of living entities. Shakti tattva means Radharani and her expansions. Vishnu tattva, Krishna and his expansions. Jiva tattva, that's us. Then there's Shiva tattva. All these other tattvas have numerous members. This Shiva tattva has one member. Or maybe four members, if you like. But anyway, it's a special, very special category. Therefore, in this verse, 43, it's described that the abode of Lord Shiva, because here we're talking about abodes, the abode of Lord Shiva is not in the material world. But it is not exactly in Vaikuntha. It's in between. Yeah. There's an interesting description in Brihad Bhagavatamrita of how Gopakumar, who is visiting different abodes on his way back to Godhead, he goes from Brahmaloka, he goes to Shivaloka. When he goes from Brahmaloka to Shivaloka, he passes through the coverings of the material universe, through the Brahmajyoti, and comes out on the other side of the Brahmajyoti, and meets Lord Shiva and his associates in his abode, Shivaloka. And there, Lord Shiva's associates are worshipping Lord Shiva by saying that he is worshipped by materialistic people and liberated souls. People at least who are Brahman realized. So in other words, his abode, the higher levels of his abode are beyond the Brahmajyoti. But to exactly put it, you know, all in a totally coherent way is not so easy. So let us just leave it at that for the time being. Then there's Haridham, the Vaikuntha region, and above that is Goloka. So then in text 44, actually in texts 44, 45, and 46, we are going to hear, particularly 44, 45, 46, how Krishna, Govinda, in Gokula or Goloka Vrindavan, is higher than Durga of Devi Dham, Shambhu from Mahesh Dham, and Shiradakshai Vishnu, or Lord Narayan from Hari Dham. These three verses are specifically following on from text 43. And first of all, Durga. I'll read the translation of text 44. The external potency Maya, who is of the nature of the shadow of the Chit potency, is worshipped by all people as Durga, the creating, preserving, and destroying agency of this mundane world. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda in accordance with whose will Durga conducts herself. So in the purport, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta gives a description of Durga. She is riding on her lion. She has 10 arms, which represent the 10 phases of life within a lifetime, within this material world, or the 10 main samskaras, beginning with Garbha Dan. Garbha means womb, and Dan means charity. So the giving of charity to the womb of the mother. And concluding with the funeral samskar. So these are different phases that people go through in their lives. And the idea is that her 10 arms represent those 10. She has different weapons, one in each of her 10 arms. Particularly, she has the trident in one of them. It has 3 prongs representing the threefold miseries of material life. So, in other words, all these 10 samskaras, which are, you know, materialistic people take as being very nice, actually they're represented by these different weapons. It's not like they're gifts, you might think. These samskaras are often seen as being very pious and very nice and even a little glorious or something like that. But in the context of their manifestation in their original form in the body of Durga, they're represented by different weapons. In other words, as you go through the different phases of life in the material world, you get caught more by the material world. First, you're caught by birth. By conception. Then you're caught by birth. Then you're caught by, I don't know what the third one is, but, you know, hair cutting comes in somewhere. First grains, name-giving comes in somewhere. So all these samskaras means you are getting driven deeper into material life, because these 10 weapons, with these weapons, Durga, oh, she's a very heavy lady. She is a very heavy lady. And Prabhupada talks about how some people, they try to dodge Durga's weapons. Here comes the trident with the 3 prongs of difficulties created by your own body and mind, other living entities, and material nature. So if somehow you dodge that trident, then the sword may get you. But if you dodge the sword, then the chopper may get you. In other words, if you're expert at trying to sidestep material nature, well, you'd have to really be on your toes, because she, with her 10 arms, she really goes for it in a big way. And Prabhupada said, if you dodge all 10 weapons, then the lion will get you. So, one way or another, you can't win. And that is why she's called Durga. Durga means prison house. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Daivihiye Shagunamai Mama Maya Duratya Ya. This divine energy of mine, consisting of the 3 modes of material nature, is very difficult to overcome. But Mam Avaye Prapadyante Mayam Etam Tarantite. If you surrender to Krishna, you can easily cross beyond it. Otherwise, no chance. Probably the trident will get you. That's the first weapon. Threefold miseries. So in this way, of course, Durga, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta explains in the purport, she is a devotee. She doesn't really enjoy this, harassing the living entities. But she understands it's her duty. And beyond just being her duty, there is this conception that by harassing the living entities, the living entities will become inspired to get out of her clutches. They'll become inspired to surrender to Krishna. So there is this aspect to Durga's functioning, which is something, you know, nicer than just hassling all these nonsense people. So this is really where Durga comes in. She is trying to push the living entities that you wake up and take shelter of my Lord, who is Govinda, Krishna. Right at the end of the purport, on page 84, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta makes an interesting point, which... Anyway, let's just read it. Last paragraph, page 84. Durga, worshipped by the people of this material world, is the Durga described above. But the spiritual Durga, mentioned in the mantra, which is the outer covering of the spiritual realm of the Supreme Lord, is the eternal maidservant of Krishna and is therefore the transcendental reality, whose shadow, the Durga of this world, functions in this mundane world as her maidservant. Yes. So this is something we didn't mention when we were discussing the mantra. The mantra means, this is, as he says here, see the purport of verse 3. This is the mantra, Kleem Krishnaya Govindaya Gopijana Valabhaya Swaha. Now this Swaha is the internal potency. There are different ways of looking on this mantra. And one way was actually described in some detail there, where Srila Bhaktisiddhanta broke down the wording of the mantra and kind of expanded on the meaning of each word. And there swa was one word and ha was another word. And they were related to this principle of sacrifice or surrender, and through that realizing your eternal relationship with Krishna. Now in this context mentioned here on page 84, there's another way of looking on swaha. And that is described in some detail in Gopal Tapani Upanishad, which discusses this mantra at some length. And there swaha is explained to be the internal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, you know, of course we don't want to complicate things too much, but that is basically what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is getting at here by referring to the purport of Shloka 3. Even though in the purport of Shloka 3, it is not exactly directly mentioned, you know, as such, but that is the transcendental fact behind it, that swaha in that mantra is indicating the internal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Durga, or Maya, Mahamaya within the material world, is of course the reflection of that internal potency. And one can enter into Goloka Vrindavan or Gokula Vrindavan through that mantra, which embodies, of course, the internal potency. If you come under the shelter of the internal potency, then you can go back to Godhead and enter the mantra, Goloka, which has around its boundaries the mantra, or the boundaries of which are the mantra. There's an interesting description Jiva Goswami gives in his purport of text 3 of Brahma Samhita, which we didn't mention, we haven't mentioned yet, but we can just refer to now, where he discusses this. He discusses the spiritual Durga, who is a form of Srimati Radharani. So just listen to this. This may be a little mind-expanding. Maybe it'll wake some of us up if we're struggling with either yoga nidra or other forms of sleep. So Jiva Goswami, in his commentary on text 3, says, sometimes the goddess Durga is described as the supreme controller. This is also correct because there's no difference between the potencies and Lord Krishna, the master of all potencies. This is confirmed by the following words of the Gautamiya Tantra, which says, Krishna is Durga, Durga is Krishna. One who sees that they are different will not become liberated from the cycle of repeated birth and death. And Jiva Goswami goes on to say, Durga is the personal potency of Lord Krishna, and therefore she is Lord Krishna himself. This is in terms of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. For this reason, Durga should not be considered manifested from a portion of the Lord's illusory potency Maya. He's now referring to this spiritual Durga, who is not manifested from the illusory Maya. This fact is confirmed by the following statement of the Nirukti, which is a Vedic dictionary. Even if one continually worships her, Durga is still difficult to understand. Durga is also described in Narada Pancharatra, which says, Durga is the Supreme Goddess. She is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She is the transcendental potency of the Lord. Simply by understanding her, one immediately attains the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is not otherwise. Have you understood her yet? If you have, you've understood Krishna, apparently. She is identical with Gokula's queen, Sri Radha, who possesses a great treasure of love for Krishna. By her grace, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the master of all living entities, is easily understood. She is the potency of personified devotional service. She worships her beloved Supreme Lord. Because she is understood only with great difficulty, the saintly devotees call her Durga, which means difficult to understand. She is the personal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and she is always filled with the nectar of love for Him. From her is manifested the Mahamaya potency, the controller of all conditioned souls. And final little quote from the Sammohana Tantra. Durga herself says, I am Durga. I possess all virtues. I am not different from Sri Radha, the eternal, supreme goddess of fortune. Hope that wasn't too esoteric for anyone. So she is a form of Yogamaya, of the internal potency. And she is particularly connected with the material creation. Yes. So this is the spiritual Durga, the internal potency, represented in the mantra as Swaha. So having possibly bewildered you all with that, let us move on to text 45. Just as milk is transformed into curd by the action of acids, that means yogurt. But yet the effect, curd, is neither the same as, nor different from its cause, milk. So, I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, of whom the state of Shambhu is a transformation for the performance of the work of destruction. This is now going into a little more detail about Shambhu, not Sadashiva, but Shambhu, who we have read about in the earlier verses. So he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has somehow mystically, esoterically, practically, inexplicably become contacted and affected by the material nature. Therefore, he's in his own unique category. Not exactly the Supreme Lord, but not a jiva. Interesting description is there in the purport. Let's read a bit of the purport. Shambhu is not a second Godhead. We should not think that he is now a competitor. Those who may think it's like that commit an offense. It's definitely not like that. The supremacy of Shambhu is subservient to that of Krishna. Hence, they're not really different from each other. The non-distinction is established by the fact that just as milk treated with acid turns into yogurt, so Godhead becomes subservient to himself when he himself attains a distinct personality, a distinct entity, by the addition of a particular element of adulteration, which means contact with Shiva, with Durga. I mean, the material Durga now. This personality has no independent initiative. He's dependent on Krishna. So now we get an interesting description of how it's like that. How Shambhu is like that. The said adulterating principle is constituted of a combination of. So this is what happens. He contacts Maya. Therefore, the stupefying quality of Maya, which we just talked about a little bit in regard to Durga, the material Durga, how everyone becomes confused and afflicted by material consciousness and the sufferings of material life. So the stupefying effect of Durga comes into play on Lord Shiva. After all, he is the husband, and the wife is considered the better half. The husband, it's very hard for the husband to remain totally aloof from the wife. This is why even Krishna in Dwaraka was forced to go and get the Parijata tree for Satyabhama. So, on the basis of that principle, Shambhu has given himself to Durga and as such has accepted some of her influence. So then, because Shiva is also intimately connected with the living entities, being sort of like the original father of the living entities, being that glance which injected them into the womb of his wife. Therefore, he's also affected through contact with the living entities. And therefore, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says that along with the stupefying quality of the deluding energy, there is the quality of non-plenitude, which for those of you who are not walking dictionaries means incompleteness. Yes. The jivas are small. They're not huge and unlimited. They're small. So, Shiva is intimately connected with the jivas in the material world. So he's also influenced by that. So he's influenced by a reduction in consciousness. I mean, that's the effect. By their association, his consciousness is reduced somewhat. It doesn't become reduced to the level of the jivas, but it becomes reduced from the level of Mahavishnu, who has complete consciousness. Are you with us? Okay. Then third part. There is, in this whole mixture which makes up the character of Shambhu, there is a slight degree of the ecstatic come cognitive principle. In other words, there's a little bit of chit, the consciousness, spiritual potency, and there's a little bit of the hladini, pleasure potency. But just a little bit. Because he, compared to Krishna, even compared to Mahavishnu, he's much smaller. He's just the glance. Mahavishnu is just a part of a part of Krishna. So compared to Krishna, Mahavishnu is relatively small. But Shambhu is just the glance only of Mahavishnu. So he's even smaller still. So as a result, there's just a relatively small amount of these spiritual potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Is that, although it burns separately in them, is the same in its quality? I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who exhibits himself equally in the same mobile manner in his various manifestations. So this is referring to the deities in Haridam. Yeah. So if you turn over page 88, in the fifth line down from the top of the page, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says, in this sloka, the activities of the subjective portions of the divinity are enunciated by the specification of the nature of Shiradakshai Vishnu. So this verse is about Shiradakshai Vishnu. Although in principle it applies to all the Narayan forms, all the Vaikuntha forms, Vishnu forms, all the avatars, the different types of avatars we talked about the other day, they're all like candles lit by the original candle. And when they're all lit, then you may not easily be able to distinguish which is the original and which is not the original. But still there is an original, and if you look carefully and try and understand, then you'll be able to see that Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he has the 64 qualities in full, and these other forms, they don't. And let us go on to 47. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who, assuming his own great subjective form, who bears the name of Shesha, replete with the all-accommodating potency, and reposing in the causal ocean with the infinity of the world in the pause of his hair, enjoys creative sleep, yoga nidra. So, this is Anantashesh, who is the couch that Mahavishnu is lying on. And if you remember way back in verse 2, where we were hearing about Gokula, then it said that Gokula, all the different manifestations of Gokula are sprouted from a part of his infinitary aspect, which we explained there as being Ananta. Ananta is supporting the whole Vaikuntha realm. Ananta Shesha or Sheshanaga is doing the same thing in the material realm. He's the couch, just like Ananta in Vaikuntha is serving in so many ways, sustaining all the Vaikuntha planets and so on, and becoming Krishna's clothes and shoes and bed and so on and so forth. So Sheshanag in the material world continues the same practice, helping. He's helping as the couch of Mahavishnu. On his heads, he's holding the universes. Sometimes when he gets, and then with his many mouths, he's reciting Srimad Bhagavatam. Sometimes when he gets into great ecstasy, he starts dancing, and the universes start bouncing on his heads. And then it can be very dangerous in the universes. And different things like this he's doing. This is Ananta. Then he's also there for Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. He is always helping. He is always serving. And I think we'll just finish here and we can briefly go through the others first thing tomorrow. Any comments or questions? This is from his commentary on verse 3 of Brahma Samhita. But he was quoting Narada Pancharatra was one scripture. Gautamiya Tantra. That's where that verse, what is that? What is it? Radhika Paradevata. There's one famous verse about Radharani. Anyone remember that verse? So famous I can't remember it. Radhika Paradevata. Anyway, I'll look it up for tomorrow. It's one of the definitive verses about Radharani. So yeah, Gautamiya Tantra, Narada Pancharatra, and he also quoted Sammohana Tantra. These are all tantric, Vaishnav tantras, to do with the process of worship. We mainly just focus on Narada Pancharatra. That's the supreme Vaishnav Tantra. Tantra means a literature which focuses on the practical mechanics of how to conduct worship. Any other comments or questions? Because Brahma... Actually, no, what is it? Something like that, yeah. The numbers? Now, I don't have Nectar of Devotion with me. But, you know, like for example, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, one of the things they have is that they are almost eternal. The jivas don't have that normally in their normal situations. Then Vishnu, the Narayan forms, they have, one of the things they have is that many worlds come from their bodies that Brahma and Shiva don't have. You know, if you look in Nectar of Devotion, you'll see there, I think it's chapter 20 or 21 maybe. But Krishna, there's four special qualities Krishna has. Who can tell us one of the special qualities that Krishna has, which even Narayan doesn't have? Just one. Krishna has beautiful pastimes. Well, look, actually, so do all the other. Like Lord Ram, he has very beautiful pastimes. They're very amazing. So what is it about the beautiful pastimes which... No, he has pastimes which are extraordinary beyond the pastimes of any other form of the Lord. Particularly his childhood pastimes. Now we shouldn't misunderstand what this childhood pastimes means. It means his Vrindavan pastimes. In total. It does not mean his baby pastimes only. It means his Vrindavan pastimes. All of them. And actually particularly the Rasa dance. Yeah. His childhood pastimes means as a young fellow up to the time of being a youth, which is still childhood. Yeah. So particularly his childhood pastimes means his Vrindavan pastimes. And men, can you, one man, tell us? And it's the flute. So do many other people. Ian Anderson used to play the flute. You've probably never heard of him, which is probably good. But Krishna plays the flute like no one else can play the flute. That's the thing. We talked about Krishna playing the flute. And that is just something most amazing. Totally unique. There's only one, Krishna. He can do like that. And Mataji's, can you tell us a third special quality of Krishna? Yes? Well, he's also attractive to all men and all species. So the thing is, he has a standard of beauty which cannot be found in anyone else, even Lord Narayan or any other of his personal expansions, what to speak of people like us. Yes, his beauty is incomparable, totally incomparable, including to women and to men. When men would see Krishna, sometimes they would faint. Sometimes when Krishna would see himself in the mirror, he would become bewildered completely and hanker to become a gopi. So therefore he appeared as Lord Chaitanya. And how many have we given now? We've four or three, right? So what's the fourth? Mother Vishakha Priya. Yes. He is surrounded by devotees who possess a standard of love of God not found in the devotees of any other form of the Lord. Yes. His devotees in Vrindavan, the love of God they have is completely incomparable. So those are the four which make Krishna outstanding, even from other four forms of himself. Then there's various others which his Vishnu forms have, which make them outstanding from Brahma and Shiva, and there's this type of hierarchy there. But you can look in Nectar of Devotion if you want the details. What's spoken of in the Nectar of Devotion is the Shiva on Mount Kailash, who's a demigod within this universe. Yeah. Sadashiva Loka, Maheshdam, Kailash, Mahakala Dham. These are the four parts of Shiva Loka. Yeah, the greater abode of Lord Shiva. Okay. Well, for tomorrow, let's see. You could read through the remaining few verses from this section and then go on. We are going to attempt to get up to about text 55 tomorrow, if we can. Prabhupada Ki Jai.